Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm going to do morning chant. An unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000,000,000 kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I bow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's our first lecture back. Jocko and I have been on vacation for a month. It's great to be back. I'm going to try to mute everybody again. I can hear somebody. Okay. Last Saturday, Ron gave the lecture. I thought it was a really good lecture. I enjoyed it a lot.
Do you want a video?
I enjoyed it a lot. And so thank you, Ron. I can see you. You're on part of my view. Thank you very much. So I thought it was a really good lecture. And he ended with a verse by Weining from the Platform Sutra, which, because it was the last thing Ron said, I was a little concerned that some people listening might have been confused by the verse. So I wanted to talk about it because I really want to make sure that you didn't understand the verse as being nihilistic. So here's what Ron quoted, part of what Ron quoted from Weining. And this is Red Pine's translation. Nothing that exists is true. Don't think that what you see is true. If you think you see the true, what you see is surely false. If you want to find the true, the mind free of the false is true. Unless your mind forsakes the false, nothing is true where truth can't be. So I think this is very Zen and pretty obtuse. So maybe since it was at the end of the lecture, you might have thought to yourself, what was that? And then forgot about it. Or you couldn't figure it out. Or you might have thought, does this mean that nothing really exists? That nothing is real? Or maybe you might have thought something like, Buddhism teaches that nothing is real or true or everything is false. So I'm pretty concerned about that because one of the difficulties about the doctrine of emptiness, the teaching of emptiness, is that sometimes people understand it as nihilistic. So if you take that kind of teaching at face value, which is the same as saying, and we say in the Heart Sutra, no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, which is no inherently existing eyes, no inherently existing nose, etc. So, but if you take that at face value, you might think that it means that there's nothing true about anything. For example, you might think that there's no morality, which is particularly problematic, or that there are no ethical truths. Or you might think that nothing really exists. That our reality is some kind of smoke and mirrors. So I would say this is a kind of nihilistic understanding, and at its Buddhism is not nihilistic. So if you understand this quotation or any teaching of Buddhism to mean nothing matters or nothing exists, then this is a misunderstanding of the teaching. And if you can't figure out why it's a misunderstanding of the teaching, you should come to Jocko and I and ask us about it. Because this is super important, really important, not to understand things being empty of inherent existence as a nihilistic teaching. Okay, so what do the verses mean that Ron talked to us at the end? And I'm going to do four lines, the first four lines of this verse. First, I'll tell you it comes from a text called the Platform Sutra, which was written in 780 in China. And it's purported to be the teachings of the sixth ancestor, Weining, although that's up for debate about who actually wrote it, but that it is a major text in our canon, in the Zen canon, is not up for debate. So the verse that if you want to look for this, the verse that Ron quoted is in section 48 of the sutra, which is pretty near the end of the sutra. And there's a story associated with it right before Wei Ning taught this teaching. So here's a story. Wei Ning had commissioned a stupa to be built the year before. And it's unclear whether who the stupa was for, but it could have been for Wei Ning. The stupa is where relics are kept, one of the functions of the stupa. So he had this stupa commissioned to be built, and after it had been constructed, he gathered all of his students together and he said, I'm going to die in the next 30 days. So this was really shocking to his students. And not surprisingly, some of his students were quite upset and they started to cry. It's really kind of a poignant scene. Here they are at the stupa that's been constructed at Wei Ning's request. The students are all around him, and he says, I'm going to die in a month. And people are so moved by that. I mean, this is our teacher. They love him so much. And they start to cry. So here's what Wei Ning said to them. He said, who is it you are crying for so sadly now? If you're sorry for me, you don't know where I'm going. I know myself where I'm going. If I didn't know where I was going, I wouldn't be announcing it to you in advance. If you knew where I was going, then you wouldn't be crying. The Dharma nature is fundamentally without generation or without birth, and extinction or without death. Going and coming. You should all sit down, and I will recite a verse for you. It is called the verse of true and false, or provisional, and motion and stillness. So it is called the verse of true and false and motion and stillness. So this is the sermon that Ron quoted from at the end of his talk. So out of all of his students who were crying, one of his students was not crying. And Wei Ning complimented him, and he said, you understand the teachings of no birth and no death. And I laud you for this deep understanding that you have. And he meant it sincerely. He was being sincere with the student. But I think the question we should ask about this is not to the student who got the teachings, but to the students who are crying. Because, well, chances are good, we would probably be the students who were crying. I would be the student who was crying. Last weekend, I watched a lecture by my teacher, Sojin Weitzman, who's 91 now, and Sojin Roshi has been diagnosed with cancer, and, so it may be that he might be dying soon. And there were times in the lecture when I just cried to watch him teaching. I cried for the emotion and the loss and the love that I felt, that I feel for my teacher. So what about those of us who are crying when we hear that our teacher will die, is dying? So here's an interesting thing to consider about that. If all of the students had covered up their sadness and pretended that they were not grieving at the news that their teacher was dying, they would have not received the teachings that Wei Ning then offered them. This teaching on what is real and what is false. It's not bad to have emotions. All of us are in delusion about the nature of reality in some times, some ways. As things come forward and meet us. But it's very delusion, this very emotions that we feel, that we learn about the Dharma. This is how we learn. This is what it is to be human. As human beings, we should not have the expectation that we will meet absolutely every experience with equanimity. Or we may want to cultivate the fact that even in the midst of our emotions, we cultivate equanimity, that is our wish for ourselves and others. Even while we're caught, that we learn to cultivate this, that we see this side of being caught and the side of equanimity simultaneously functioning together. So the point is, don't get caught in one side or the other. And when Wei Ning said, "I know where I'm going," he was basically saying, "I'm not afraid of dying." And since he knew that he was going to die soon, he also wanted to take care of his students. And so he said to them, "Please sit down." Kindly, he said to them, "I will explain to you about birth and death. I will talk to you about what you do not understand. I will talk to you about, in a kind of roundabout way, for us, I'll talk to you about this grief." So he tells him, he says, the true nature of reality is actually process. It's without end, it's without beginning. We talk about this a lot at Ocean Gate, this way in which we are engaged in the totality of our life and the totality of all life functioning together. So our experience includes birth and death as demarcations, but actually everything is this interbeing, interacting, codependent, and constantly impermanent functioning, coming and going, no birth, no death. So we say, and yet we say, what is birth? What is death? For his students, Wei Ning wanted to address this. He wanted to address that this is our human life, that we grieve. Wei Ning did not want to leave his students hanging. He said, "Let me teach you about birth and death." And this is what he said. So these are the first four verses that Ron quoted at the end of his lecture. "Nothing that exists is true. Don't think that what you see is true. If you think you see the true, what you see is surely false. If you want to find the true, the mind free of the false is true. Unless your mind forsakes the false, nothing is true where truth can't be. Unless your mind forsakes the false, nothing is true where truth can't be." So let's look at the first line here on this text. Nothing that exists is true. In other words, nothing as a fixed entity separate from all things is true. Don't think that what you see, don't think that what you conventionally see is true. So he's saying there is birth and death, and there is also no birth and no death. If you think of Wei Ning, he's saying, if you think of me, the person, as a fixed entity, as existing in some kind of solid, separate way, then this is not the whole truth. He said, if I understand myself, or you, if we understand ourselves, or we understand Wei Ning to be fixed, unchanging person who is born at a certain time, dies at a certain time, who has no connection with all of life's processes, who is not interconnected, this is false. This is understanding the word exists to mean it is solid, it is not porous, it is not interconnected or affected by anything. It's a kind of hard, rigid, well-defined, unaffected by anything existence. That is not our life. That is not Wei Ning. That is not the self. So Wei Ning said, nothing that exists in this way is true. I don't exist in this, and neither do you, in this disconnected way. You don't exist in this disconnected way. And if you think that you do, or if you think that all being exists in this way, then it is delusional. It's delusion. from a Buddhist perspective, it is false. So conventionally, death exists. It's real. And at the same time, death does not exist, because death, from that perspective, from the more universal, in this great interconnected mandala, is more like transition, a falling away, a reformatting, a reconstitution of our elements. So birth and death exists, and birth and death does not exist in the way that we think about it. So we say that this whole understanding of the totality of both birth and death and no birth and death, this is real. It's not false. So if we only understand birth and death just as birth, I was born on this day, I die on this day, you were born on this day, you die on this day, if that's the whole truth, if that's your understanding of the whole truth of our life, then that's false. But if that understanding includes the totality of no coming, no going, process, inclusion, interconnection, interpenetration, functioning, the whole works, that is true. So that's what he's saying when he says that nothing exists is true, but don't think that what you see, nothing that exists is true as a kind of fixed entity or separate from all things. Don't think that what you see conventionally is true. So the next line is, if you think you see the true, what you see is surely false. If you think you see the true, what you see is surely false. So in other words, he's saying, if you find yourself caught in this kind of dualistic logic, this disconnected thinking about things, persons, ideas, situations, that everything has a fixed identity, then if you think you see the true, in other words, if that's what your understanding of what is true, if that's what you think you see, then you know that you left out the part about the interconnection, the interbeing. And so he says, what you think is true is truly false. I hope this makes sense. If you think you see the true, in other words, if you have this fixed idea about self and others, then what you see from that perspective is surely false. So if you understand a situation or another person as fixed, unchanging, or if you are absolutely intent upon a particular view, because that view of yourself, a particular opinion, this is right, this is right. If you are fixated on that opinion, and it has no connection in the sense of it has no openness, it's not spacious, it's not open to any other kind of interpretation. In fact, all it is a way that you reify and define your understanding of yourself. So there can't be any room in there for anything different. Because if you let something else in, then you have to question the nature of who you are in a way that's very threatening. So he says, if you think that's the truth, what you see is surely false. And then he says, if you want to find the true, the mind free of the false is true. So the question here is, how do we understand this life? We are real. Problems are real. Ethics are real. But the question is, how is it real? How do we find what's true? We find what's true by being free from our false ideas of separateness, or our false ideas about a fixed life, a static life, fixed situations, reified notions of who another person is, static notions about the nature of who we are. So, for example, and we talk about this a lot at Ocean Gate, I think we all know from our personal experience that ethics are a koan. Ethics are not hard and fast rules. They have to come from the response of the totality of a situation. We know that this is the koan of morality and ethics. As soon as we know that ethics and morality are based on interconnection, empathy, shared life, we know or can investigate what is the correct response. That's how we find the truth of a situation. Not by saying, oh, ethics are this, ethics are that. Not by saying, do not steal, period. Never, ever, ever steal. Because we can all think of times when maybe stealing might be the appropriate response. Now, we should always question that. That's what we have, these admonitions, because they become a koan. We say to ourselves, what does it mean to steal? What are the ramifications of that? What does it mean to take what isn't given? What does it mean within the context of the totality of our situation? When it's not just about me, but it's about everything within the context of my life. What does that mean? So we have this way that we can approach a problem. We have a way that we can start to ask those questions. And that's really important. We know that abuse is wrong because it is an expression of a selfish, disconnected person. It is harmful. It stems from a mind that believes in a kind of false existence that is not inclusive of the other. This mind, this kind of mind, does not see that the self and other fundamentally are not different from each other. So that's how we become realized. This is realization. It's when we can hold both existence and know inherently existing at the same time and to act from that place. So another way to say this is, yes, I'm a person. I exist. Yes, that person is not me. And at the same time, I am not different from that person. We are both the same in that we are in this life together. We are one Dharma, one universal process called life. We live together with all beings. Now, knowing that, how do I incorporate it into my life and respond skillfully for both them and myself? And as we know, again, that's a koan. That's a koan that we struggle with often. So the next line is unless your mind forsakes the false, nothing is true where true can't be. Unless your mind forsakes the false, nothing is true where truth can't be. So, this is the practice of no self. You have to integrate yourself with all beings. With all being in this life, in each situation. Forsaking the false is to let go of the idea that you're the only one in the world. So that's this practice of no self, dropping body and mind, this practice of being inclusive. So we have to identify, we have to own, it's another way to look at this, we have to identify, we have to own and investigate and accept our problems, our delusion. To forsake the false does not mean that we hide because we want to be seen as perfect. To forsake the false is the students who cried when they heard that Wei Ning was going to die. They didn't try to be perfect. They didn't try to act like that they didn't care. They didn't say, oh, I understand the interconnectedness of all life. I understand. I know where you're going. You're going into where? nirvana, some other place, when they didn't understand. Instead, they opened their hearts. They said, oh, we are grieving. We don't try to hide the fact that we have some perfect idea of the teaching. And by the way, I think that our teaching, and so does Zen, if they had hid their grief and said, oh, don't feel anything, life coming and going. If they had done that, it would not have been our teachings. Dogen says, you know, in aversion we'd spread, in attachment leaves fall. That's also our life. That's our human life. So we don't have to pretend that we're pure. We don't have to pretend that we have no passion. This is not a passionless existence. To forsake is to renounce or give up our delusion. But the only way that we can truly do this is to accept our delusion. Accept our delusion, transform our delusion, but not repress our delusion or repress our feelings in this case. And I'm not saying that our feelings are delusional. Just saying repression isn't very helpful, period. I think the teaching here about this for us is that the question is, have my passions, have my feelings, and what's the most skillful way to express them? I think in this case with Wei Ning, crying is certainly an appropriate way to express one's feelings. But there are other times when, say, we express anger, greed, we may feel, those kinds of things when we need to kind of say, okay, hang on a second, let's put a break on this and see whether or not this is actually helpful. So we cry when we hear that our teacher is dying, we grieve, because on one level we are losing that person that we know. We will not be able to see them face to face, person to person, body to body in Doksan anymore, go to the Zendo with them. And yet on another level they are still completely and totally with us. They will always universally be part of our lives. And then finally, the last line is, nothing is true where truth can't be. Nothing is true where truth can't be. So until we figure out how this simultaneity of, as I would say, Dogen would say, the particular and the absolute, this Dharma position, the particularity of the Dharma position of the self, of the person, of the situation, that also is inclusive of this universal aspect of all this mandala of life, lifing life, this mandala of the whole works functioning. Until we figure out or have some idea about this, if we're living in a world where it's all about us, where we're in the center of this kind of reified fixed circle that just stays around us, and it's impenetrable, until we figure this out, we're living a false model of reality. And that model is, Wei Ning is saying, nothing is true where truth can't be. If we don't know this teaching, how can we ever know the map? We can't loosen our fixed views. If we can't do that, how can we walk the path? We have to try, and we have to investigate, and we have to understand this truth as this larger event, this life, this intertwining, no beginning, no end, complete dependence, no separation, then we can truly express who we are as individuals, as the particular. How do we fit into this world? What is our life? How do we function in this mandala of relationships? When we work with this, then we can express our particularity and our universality together. It's this deep abiding connection, this deep faith in life, faith in each other, faith in the Dharma, the shared impermanence, no birth, no death. Life is Buddha Dharma. It is true, not false. It is not nihilistic. It is an altruistic path, an altruistic life. It is the self becoming the true self. No inherently existing self. This true self is connected, wise, compassionate, passionate. It is the one who grieves and the one who lets go simultaneously. Thank you very much.